Hi, I'm Kendall Irwin. I'm a passionate naturalist, animal rehabilitationist, and wildlife conservationist. I am a master's student at Texas State University studying population and conservation biology, and I'm a member of the GASP Lab run by Dr. Caitlin Gabor and Dr. Andrea Asbury. Today, I'm very excited to talk to you about Texas conservation efforts and my research looking at the relationship between urbanization, pollution, and the health of our aquatic ecosystems. These research interests were inspired throughout my undergraduate studies at the University of Texas at Austin, where I eventually graduated with a degree in integrative biology and a minor in English. I was originally enrolled at UT to study journalism with the intention of becoming a professional wildlife journalist. I wanted to bridge the gap between conservation efforts, science, and the public. However, in 2015, I was recruited as Austin Bat Refuge's first volunteer. Austin Bat Refuge is a local nonprofit that works to rehabilitate injured and orphaned bats, release them into the wild, and educate the public on the importance of conserving. Working with Austin Bat Refuge was so inspiring. It was a pivotal moment in my academic career, and it was when I made the decision to redirect my focus from writing about conservation efforts to conducting them through research. And so I decided to switch my major to integrative biology, and this was when I was introduced to some of my greatest mentors, Dr. Mark Kirkpatrick and Dr. David Cruz. As their student, I discovered my research interests in animal behavior and endocrinology, which comprised the foundation of my current research with Dr. Caitlin Gabor at Texas State University. So my master's work is looking at the relationship between microplastic exposure and cortisol release in Gambusia affinis, which is the Latin name for the common mosquito fish. This species of fish is highly abundant throughout Texas freshwater systems. So if you've ever taken a trip to the Greenbelt or San Marcos River, I can almost guarantee that you've encountered Gambusia affinis. These fish are social animals. They school in large numbers, and you can most often find their schools in shallow waters with moderate currents. Gambusia is a species that is sexually dimorphic. This means that males and females appear different from one another. Females can be distinguished by their relatively larger size. They can reach about 7 centimeters in length, while males are smaller and reach only about 4 centimeters. Female Gambusia can also be distinguished by the appearance of a dark spot on the posterior of their abdomen. This dark spot is what we refer to as a gravid spot and is related to her reproductive system. Mosquito fish are unique in that their breeding system is characterized by internal fertilization. This means that instead of laying eggs for a male to fertilize, Gambusia affinis have internal fertilization, and the females grow babies inside their bodies for which they later give birth to. This is similar to guppies that you'd buy at the local pet store or mollies that you might have living in your home aquariums. So Gambusia affinis received their common name, the mosquito fish, under the assumption that mosquito larvae comprise a large portion of their diet. And while they do eat mosquito larvae, they also prey upon a wide variety of invertebrates. They may also be eating small pieces of plastic that have entered into our waterways directly from sources manufacturing plastic products or the breakdown of plastic items like plastic water bottles and styrofoam cups that have generated a large quantity of pollution in both our marine and freshwater aquatic ecosystems. These small fragments of plastic measuring less than 5 millimeters in length are what we refer to as microplastics. And microplastics can be characterized based on their shape and color into a category of a microplastic shard, a microplastic film, a microplastic fiber, or a microplastic bead. These microplastics have been found in abundance in the digestive tracts of many aquatic species. This suggests that animals are unable to distinguish plastic from prey. It's possible that these microplastics resemble prey items in their color, shape, or smell. And for example, microplastic beads are a byproduct of many commonly used cosmetic products. So if you've ever used a hand sanitizer with tiny beads in it or a facial cleanser with the same small balls, you might have been consuming plastic. However, this was recognized as a threat to the health of our aquatic ecosystems and our human bodies. So in 2015, President Barack Obama passed legislation that prohibited the manufacturing of cosmetic products with microplastic beads. However, the most commonly identified form of microplastic found in fish stomachs are microplastic fibers. And these fibers are a product of our clothing. So I'd ask you to take a look at your favorite shirt, check out the tag, and see what percentage of polyester or spandex was used to create that shirt. Then I want you to keep in mind how often you wash that shirt. Well, with every wash, our washing machines have not been designed to separate those fiber byproducts from the water that filters back into our aquatic waterway. This means that every wash of your favorite shirt contributes to the increase in microplastic pollution. While the U.S. has yet to recognize this as a potential threat to the health of our ecosystems and our human bodies, France has proposed a bill that in 2025, all washing machines manufactured out of the country will be designed to separate microplastic fibers from the water re-entering our system. So as many of us know, plastic is not biodegradable. It cannot be broken down by natural sources. So once it enters into our ecosystem, it's there forever. So current research initiatives are aimed at exploring how these microplastics affect our physiology and overall health. And you may say to yourself, I don't consume microplastic. Well, you may be consuming more microplastic than you realize indirectly through your consumption of seafood. So this is an effect of the trophic cascade. And the way it goes is, let's take a small shrimp in the Gulf that recognizes a plastic as a prey item and eats it. Okay, this plastic now exists in the shrimp gut. Well, a fish comes along and eats that shrimp. The fish has now consumed both the shrimp and the plastic the shrimp originally ate. In the meantime, this fish is preying on a variety of other organisms, and it's likely to be eating plastic that it mistakes as prey. So you can imagine the microplastic load within this fish doubling if it's eating plastic particles it mistakes as prey, and also prey that's eating plastic. A fisherman comes along, catches that fish, and you buy it at your local grocery store. You eat this fish, and now microplastics have entered your body. But we do know that microplastics in the gut can travel throughout our circulation system in smaller forms called nanoplastics. And these nanoplastics are so small that they require really high-powered microscopes to identify, but they're small enough to move through our circulation systems and possibly enter our nervous system. So in order to make assumptions about how this is affecting our physiology, I want to explore, does the consumption of microplastic by Gambusia affinis elicit a stress response? So a stress response describes a series of physiological reactions that take place after a hormone is secreted by the brain when the brain receives a stimulus that it perceives as a threat. So this signal, okay, carried from the brain travels to the rest of the body through a hormone called cortisol in fish, but in humans it's called adrenaline. So you may be familiar with adrenaline's effects on the body from your own experience or from the term fight or flight. And this hormone acts as almost a superpower response, elicits this crazy amount of energy to allow you to run faster than you would have ever before or lift things. I know that there's the classic story of a woman lifting a car to save her infant that was beneath it. So the way this works is the brain releases adrenaline when it senses a threat, and this adrenaline signals to the body to reallocate energy away from essential functions like digestion and reproduction and input it only into those functions that allow for immediate avoidance of that stressor. So that's why people are able to run so fast, because that adrenaline has told the body, send all the energy towards the cardiovascular system and the muscular system, right? So cortisol acts in the body the same way as adrenaline does, but in fish bodies. And this stress response is adaptive in the short term, okay? It's adaptive in that it allows for predator avoidance and can keep the body alive given a short-term stress. However, this reallocation of energy away from essential functions is maladaptive in the long term. If the stressor is not removed, the body continues to release cortisol or adrenaline, and it continues to neglect those essential functions in favor of the functions that allow for predator escape or the stressor avoidance. When this happens, the body eventually achieves a state of chronic stress, and chronic stress can lead to death. So the questions my research aims to answer are, how does microplastic exposure affect the cortisol release and stress response in Gambusia affinis? And are the existing levels of microplastic in our Texas waterways enough to elicit chronic stress? So my hope is that this research can provide evidence used to describe the relationship between microplastic pollution and the health of our aquatic ecosystems. With that, I'd like to say thank you so much for listening today. If you'd like to explore other research currently being conducted within the GASP Lab, I'd invite you to explore our website. Please reach out to me with any questions or inquiries. And lastly, I'd like to remind you to please reduce, reuse, and recycle. Thank you.